Okay, so welcome everyone to the next exciting installment at Actuary Summit. So session today is driving value-based care in private health insurance and the new actuary's role in leveraging patient-reported data in value-based care. Today we have our two presenters. We have currently presenting from overseas, we have Jordan Zaitman. So Jordan's an experienced actuary specializing in the intersection of healthcare and data science. He's combined his private health insurance experience to lead various projects aimed at improving patient and fund outcomes through innovative actuarial techniques. So his work specifically focuses on aligning the financial incentives with patient experience and outcomes, quality of care, responsible resource allocation, and long-term sustainability. And in particular, it's through the Voice of the Patient platform. The second presenter in person is Daniel. So Daniel Erasmus is passionate about helping people to live better lives by building products, systems, and solutions that offer improved healthcare to all. So for today's presentation, Jordan will be presenting from the distant shores of Israel. Now, hopefully at some point, Jordan will appear.
There you go.
Hi, Jordan. Okay, so over to you both. Welcome.
Thank you, Brandon. I'll let Daniel present first. Sorry I couldn't be there in person, but I'm nonetheless very excited to be here present. So, yeah, Daniel, I'll let you get started.
Great. Thanks, Jordan. There we go. Thank you very much for your time. I know it's late in the afternoon on the first day, so we'll try and make it entertaining and interesting for you. As Brendan said, the session today is going to be focusing on the actuary's role in terms of not new data, but different data. And we'll be sharing more about what we've learned and how we've applied non-traditional data in terms of patient-reported data in understanding quality and value in a bit more of a nuanced and deeper perspective. And so maybe as the first point of reference, for some of you in the room, this might be old news. For some that have kind of wandered into the stream and haven't interacted with healthcare before, this might be new. But when we talk about value, the key thing that we talk about is about the context of what do patients get out of a healthcare interaction, be that an interaction with the general practitioner or be that something more serious, a treatment for cancer, operation, or something more dire. And in traditional terms, unfortunately, value has to be inferred. What I mean by that is there's no real clear pathway to understand what the patient actually got from the interaction unless you measure it. Now, when we approached this from an actuarial perspective, it was with the framework of building alternative reimbursement models in many of the other markets that we work in. So we made the assumption that that top part of the data, what did patients get, would be available. Much to our dismay, 12 or 10 years ago, we realized that's actually not captured. It's not captured widely. It's not captured well. And it's also not captured in a structured way. You'll oftentimes see folks presenting things like a net promoter score or a patient rating as an indicator of value. In worst instances, you'll oftentimes see price as the key flag of value. And there's an interesting anecdote about this where we were working with a particular provider that wanted to retire. He was an orthopod and he wanted to close off his book. So he said he'll naturally just inflate his prices so that his book dwindles. 6 months later, he was busier than ever because the market took the price increase as saying, I'm the best. And he was flooded with a patient cohort. So this is a real challenge in healthcare. And our approach to this was then to say, can we partner with someone to actually measure this? And eventually we just went into a mode where we said, well, we'll measure it ourselves and build it. And that was 12 years ago. And today I'll share some of the results of what that journey has been. And it really has been a journey going from curious actuarial mindsets into actually understanding, cheapest, how do you really measure this information and use it in a structured and proper way? So maybe before we do that, let's just talk about why. Why is this important in the PHI market? Voice of the Patient as a product or an entity is alive and kicking across a number of markets, including the UK. We're launching it in America, Hong Kong, South Africa, and of course, Australia. And if we just look at our own PHI context, in 2000, we had 4.4 healthy individuals holding up every individual that was claiming or a net drawer from PHI products. That margin has decreased over time, and we project that in 2030, it's going to be about 1.7. So the context of community rating, the structures of those products were all built in that framework and environment. And value and getting more for every dollar that we spend is one of the best ways and one of the strongest levers for us to pull on if we want to ensure that the market remains a long-term viable proposition. I'm not at all in the actuarial death spiral camp. I think that there's many things that will change and develop and improve. But part of the reason for this is the normal corporates, we've got aging, but we also have things like new technologies. And new technologies often have a dual impact. You'll have folks that are a higher severity, being able to access a more complex, expensive operation. And you also have new technology that naturally inflates the cost of treatment in the market. And so what we try and position through Voice of the Patient is this context that great healthcare is not something that is derived from good doctors, even though they think they might be the best in the industry, or from great hospitals, or from just solvent, well-funded payers. But it's actually something that's derived as a combined effort from everybody. And the patient at the center is really what you need to understand what great healthcare is. So I'll just maybe skip through some of the slides so we have some time for Jordan to present some of the magic that he's done. But what Voice of the Patient is a platform that really measures this from first principles. So as I mentioned, when we started down this journey, our perspective was that the data would be available. Since then, we've partnered with a range of international organizations, including the International Consortium for Health Outcomes Measurement, as well as the Global Surgery Foundation, to construct a pathway of measurement. And what you need to do to extract this data is understand the key dimensions of the data you'll be working with. If you talk to a patient about outcomes, there are specific dimensions of what outcomes are. You have things like what the patient perceived they were able to do following a procedure. And then you also have things that the doctor or clinician perceived that the patient is able to do after the operation. The latter is more appropriately termed CROMS, clinician-reported outcomes measurement. And I'll give you an example. If you're doing a knee replacement, doctors will oftentimes measure the degree of bend that a patient can get back into their knee. But whether or not that's 40, 50, or 60 degrees doesn't really tell you if that patient got what they wanted from that procedure. You see, if I have a knee replacement, maybe my goal is to run a marathon again in 2 years' time. If my dad gets one, maybe his goal is just to pick up a grandchild in 6 months' time without pain. And that is a key crux of the context of what value is from the patient's perspective. And if both of us have that procedure, we pay for it through the health fund and through the co-pays, we take the risk of being operated on. A key factor is then determined, did that procedure meet my expectation and my needs? And this is exactly what Voice of the Patient intends to measure. And then on top of that, understand what are the things that influence and drive value? What does the role of patient-reported experiences have, patient-reported risks, dimensions like patient sentiment, all of these additional items that you can actually get in the data? So the process that we engage with is a journey with the patient. We do not refer to it as a survey. We engage with patients directly through their health fund, and they then have the opportunity to start onboarding and share their story. It's tailored, it's personalized, and it also enables that patient to share their views over multiple interactions with the portal. We'll also automatically add in measurement dynamics related to chronic conditions. So if you're sitting on a private health insurance side, you might not know whether all of your patients are diabetics or whether or not they have a certain underlying mental health condition. Yet that will significantly impact the degree to which they might improve or experience improvement following a particular procedure. So Voice of the Patient captures that data through interactions with the patient. And so if we start on that journey, I might not know anything about a patient because they might not have had an admission. But then when the patient onboards, they'll share data. They'll tell the platform that they actually have diabetes as well, and then automatically we'll start measuring that as an additional module or protocol. Now, for those of you familiar with the traditional way that this is measured. One of the key challenges, if you translate this into funding, is that the framework for patient-reported measurement is disease-based. So the metrics from ICHOM is based on things like arthritis or diabetes or obesity. It's not based on episodic events. So we had to do quite a bit of development in the past 10 years to translate the metrics that we measure into things that you can attach to an individual interaction along the journey. And ultimately, what we can then do is attach those frameworks to contracting metrics with a hospital or a doctor to empower them to do better, but also understand how do they compare relative to their peers, and then also potentially get rewarded financially if they're able to maintain or improve certain levels of performance. Now, in the Australian environment, it's been made available to about 200,000 patients, probably 220 as of today. We're getting really good response rates, about 45% response rate. That might not sound like a massive response rate, but keep in mind that is an independently measured perception from the patients directly. This is not measured by the doctor or the hospital. So that makes it really valuable. And we're measuring across a number of organizations, including private health insurers, as well as government organizations. And some funds also leverage it as a white labeled product offering under their own brand. What we then find is that patients share information with the portal that they don't necessarily would share with their insurer. And what's interesting is the level of data and sensitivity of what is shared actually varies by brand. So we're finding that patients are more willing to share with an independent third party, like Voice of the Patient, than they are if it's a directly labeled or white labeled offering. It also differs per market. So for example, in the UK, where you've got some elements of underwriting, patients are much less willing to share data than in some of the other environments that we operate in as well. But what we find is that the results are quite interesting. So for example, if we just look at things like the correlation between smoking prevalence and level of education, you can see there's a direct link between the two. And we can also measure things like patient living arrangements, so which patients are living alone versus which patients have a support structure around them. Thinking about what does this mean for outcomes, this is really important. If you have a knee replacement and you're living alone, you're at a much higher risk of having a complication or an adverse event than if you had a partner that can take care of you in that instance. So this is some of the additional peripheral data that we're collecting. Now, the primary first kind of main chapter of data measurement relates to patient-reported experience metrics. These are the actions that happen while you are in a facility. They relate to things like were your pain needs met? Were you felt cared for? Were you informed about your operation and your procedure while you were undergoing treatment? And what's crucial about them is there are things that the hospital or doctor can control directly. So if you kind of think about where we came from an actuarial mindset here to say, can we build reimbursement models around this? It has to be something that you can tie back to what the doctor or hospital does. If we went to a hospital doctor and we said we want to contract on long-term outcomes, let's say we do hip replacements where we use the HOOS measurement tool, I don't think any doctor would be willing to contract on that because of the fact that a patient has to go through that journey as well. It depends on rehabilitation. It depends on what happens to the patients 3, 6, 12 months after the procedure. But if you go to the hospital or the doctor and you tell them, we're putting a contract in front of you or a measurement module that says we want patients' pain needs to be met at the 80th percentile compared to your risk-adjusted peers, that's something that's much more practical for them. They can have a discussion with their nursing staff and clinical staff tomorrow to make that happen. And fundamentally then the question is, does the PREMS data matter as much as the PROMS data? Keep in mind the PREMS data is the initial interaction. See that as your, and I hate to use this term, but you can think of it in this sense, but your TripAdvisor data, how was it while you were there? Does that correlate to long-term outcomes and costs and adverse events like hospital-acquired complications? And what we find is that if you measure the PREMS and you risk adjust them for the relative severity of the patient mix, and we do a number of adjustments here. We look at, say, how far the patient traveled to get their procedure, their age, their relative risk profile before they went in. You can then graph the relative scores or positioning from a competitive standpoint of these procedures, and you can group them into certain groups to see bottom, middle, and top tertile. We found that in provider contracting, tertiles or thirds are an ideal classification for contracting. Doctors and hospitals are competitive. If you tell a doctor you're in the bottom tertile, they want to know why, and they're always motivated to get into the top tertile. Now, what we then find is that if you do that and you look at, say, I'll come back to the previous slides, how do those results compare? We find that there's significant overlap between the hospitals that do better from a premise perspective and long-term outcomes. So, for example, here I'm showing you knee replacements, and I'm showing you three key metrics. We're showing you the patient-reported adverse events. So these are not hacks. These are events that patients said shouldn't have happened while they were in facility. They had a fall, or they were admitted to ICU unexpectedly, or something untoward happened. And then we're looking at two PROM metrics, so two outcome metrics. We're looking at improvement scores for mobility, and then also for just quality of life as a general metric. We do a triangulation of PROMs because we're looking at a holistic view of improvement. We don't just use one view. And you can see here that the hospitals that did better on PREMs did significantly better on the outcomes. There or thereabouts on the patient-reported adverse events. So that might be reasonable if you consider that a knee replacement is routine. It's oftentimes planned. If we go to something like hip replacements that's often driven by a fall, you see that there's a significantly lower prevalence of adverse events for the hospitals that do better. And you also find that the outcome metrics are also better for the hospitals that do better on PREM scores. And even if you take something as mundane as a hernia procedure, we find the same trend holds. In fact, if we apply this same measurement to things like theater time, level of care in terms of ICU time, as well as costs, we find the same trends. The hospitals that perform better on PREMs perform better on all of the other metrics, and the doctors as well. So looking at the data, we can see there is a defined trend between better performance from a patient interaction standpoint, things we can contract on, and the long-term benefit of what that means from patients themselves. So just jumping back into some of the PROM results before I hand over to Jordan. So what we find for some of the PROMs is that you have to do, from an actuarial perspective, quite a bit of measurement related to PROMs. PROMs is oftentimes either qualitative or quantitative. So there's general metrics. Did your quality of life improve? And if yes, by how much? A lot, not a lot, not at all. And then you get actual quantitative metrics. So score your pain on a score from 0 to 10. And you have to apply a bit of modeling there to get that into a robust model to say there was enough improvement to validate the cost and risk of the procedure. And the way that we've positioned that is as the minimal important clinical difference, meaning that if both my dad and I have our knee replacements, if we get enough of an improvement to validate the cost and risk of that, we'll go into the improved category. If we don't, we'll go into the not improved or just kind of sailing with the wind or deteriorate category. Now, why that's important is you can cut that up between different modalities. So you can look at that at a cardiac level, orthopedic level. You can drill down at a provider level. And then you can even drill down to an individual ward level. And we find there are distinct differences between individual hospitals. So there's teams of excellence and pockets of excellence in the PHI market. Interestingly enough, the PHI market's really good in general. On average, it's a really, really good market if you think about it in terms of what you'll get from overseas markets, but the variance is still significant between your bottom and your top performers. And so just a couple of other things before I hand over to Jordan, what we are drilling into now, so where we're up to at this stage is we now have hospitals that have been contracted under this arrangement to say that we can actually put financial incentives on the table that are significant enough for hospitals to want to improve and chase these metrics. But we also find that there is all of this additional data. With the advent of technology, we're now able to measure things that we weren't able to measure 5 years ago even, because of the speed at which patients can provide responses, the platforms in which they can do that. And unfortunately, a lot of this data is still being collected internationally on an actual paper-based format. So we think that there's going to be an explosion of additional data around this. And this is where I'll hand over to Jordan and just show you some of the interesting results. So, for example, there's some things there that might seem intuitive. So, for example, we find that PROM results vary by weight in terms of what the actual improvement is that a patient will get to. So if you take normal weight as your kind of benchmark, you can see that folks that are overweight or obese are less likely to achieve a decent or good PROM result, as well as folks that are underweight. But we also find that if you correlate that with things like smoker status, patients' perception to how much they'll actually improve, the results become truly fascinating. And what we're leading into next is this ability to ask the question, can the actuarial environment or space in this market move from passive measurement into active engagement? What can we do as an organization and an entity to say, let's stop keeping score of a losing game if we see patients are going to deteriorate? What can we do to help them improve? And I'll hand over to Jordan now to take us through the next couple of slides.
Sorry, Jordan, do you mind starting again on DV? Sound was low.
Sorry, can you hear me okay?
Yes, for now we can, thanks.
Okay, great. How do we shift the screen? If it's not possible, it's all good. I'll just get started.
Yep, we can see you both here in the presentation now, so all good to go.
Okay, fantastic. So hi, everyone. And yeah, thanks, Daniel, for taking us through those slides. I'm very excited to be here today. My experience is in, a bit more traditional health actuary before I moved over to Insight. But I was always passionate about data science and what kind of applications, we as actuaries with our new skill set can apply into the health market. And I think value-based care is a really great example. It's kind of an open book as it's still quite a new field. So it presents a lot of opportunity to a lot of young actuaries to come in and sort of start exploring, how can we take the profession forward and apply it into a new area, one that actuaries can definitely, take the lead in going forward in Australia and also globally. So it's a really cool example. There we go. Next slide, please. Sorry, I'm not sure my screen's coming through.
Jordan, we have a slide with why PREM's problems alone aren't enough.
Okay, perfect. Okay, that's great. I can't see it on my end, so that's good to know it's working. So sorry, everyone, that couldn't be there in person, but no problem. So as Daniel mentioned, so PREMs and PROMs are the main measurement tools that we use in value-based care. But unfortunately, they just have a few different limitations. So I guess the three key ones in our case, there tends to be a little bit of a bias in some of the results. So people tend to skew towards the higher end. So, a lot of the time they're presented with, a 5-point scale where they can answer between strongly disagree and strongly agree. And we see people tend to shift more towards agree and strongly agree when they're presented with a simple numeric scale. So unfortunately, this numeric scale lacks granularity and nuance, and also tone. So it's really hard to understand exactly what patients are feeling, exactly what their experience was when we're only getting data that is on a scale. And on the other end, there is the ability to obtain a lot of unstructured data, which is what we've started doing in Voice of the Patient. But then to actually physically manually review all this data, it's a very inconsistent and slow process. So what this means is if someone at a fund or a hospital is presented with, thousands of comments from their patients, how are they able to actually read through that efficiently, try to understand the key themes and the feedback that they're receiving from patients and then act upon that? So this is where we come in. And just quickly, another small comment on the bias. So I think this graph on the left is very fascinating, where it shows, especially in healthcare, why bias is a big issue, because you can see as risk prevalence increases, the perception of people's health decreases. But even in the highest categories of risk, over half of patients or half of people still believe they're at least good health. So it's really important that we try to discern and sort of separate how people, people's feedback and try to make it a bit more reflective of their actual health and their actual outcomes. So to do that, I tried to touch into something I learned in the data science program as part of my fellowship qualification, which is natural language processing. So at a high level, natural language processing is just a branch of AI that teaches computers to read and understand human language. So in our case, this is really important, and it's a really great tool for us to use because it allows us to transform unstructured data and put it into a structured format for, you know, our funds and our hospitals to be able to read and interpret the analysis that we've done and try to take action and act upon it as well. So in our case, some of the key capabilities are sentiment detection and entity recognition. So ability to label free text as either a positive or a negative comment. And then for entity recognition, this is quite important because health data is quite confidential. So a lot of the time patients will leave feedback that's, you know, praising a particular nurse or praising a particular doctor, or on the opposite end, saying, oh no, this doctor was really bad, or this nurse was really bad. So, you know, it's really important that we flag, and remove, names. So, you know, confidentiality is maintained, in the data that we present to our clients. So just going back to the three key challenges that we have with traditional prems and prompts, we can see that NLP is a really good tool to assist with that. So, in terms of bias, it allows us to, you know, use that unstructured data to try and pull out the patient's sentiment. So just try to give us a much more holistic view to try and understand why there might be some bias or how patients are actually feeling in terms of their care, which then helps us with the loss of nuance problem because we're able to get, you know, analyze the language and tone, capture a bit more emotion, some of the subtext that numeric scales aren't able to capture. And it's very scalable and consistent. And because it is an automated machine learning or AI model, there is no, you know, human bias in interpreting the results. So it's clear, it's concise, and it's also, you know, live updated model. It's constantly updating, constantly improving as well over time. So just to like have a quick overview of how the process works. I won't get into too much detail, but just to have a high-level overview. So the sentiment analysis pipeline. So it starts with unstructured data. So this is where we get all the free text. You know, we have thousands and thousands of comments that we've started capturing in the last few months. So how can we take this free text patient feedback from the Voice of the Patient platform and create a, you know, a structured output that, you know, we can use, our clients can use, you know, hospitals can look at directly. How can we do that? So we start with a little bit of data pre-processing. So this is where we take the data, apply some, you know, minor cleansing steps, so like correcting for spelling, just to help the model be able to interpret, you know, what patient's actually trying to say. And then convert the text into a sequence of interpretable data. So this means like splitting, you know, words into sentences, trying to remove stop words, that kind of thing. And then we finally apply the sentiment model. So the model we've adopted is called the Roberta model. So this is based on Google's BERT model, which is trained on a corpus of 3.3 billion words. So it's taking all the best available information on the internet, putting it all together. And it's a really great open source tool that Google has, you know, published in the last 5 to 10 years. And it's allowed like a multitude of different applications. So in our case, we're using the sentiment analysis model available through the BERT model. But this is the same model that underpins a lot of the AI chatbots. So particularly for Google, it'd be the Gemini model. It's built on the same underlying data set. And then finally, to communicate the results, we've actually been able to integrate the model directly into a Power BI dashboard. And we present the results to our funds and to our hospitals through word clouds, which just allows, you know, non-technical people to be able to, you know, interpret the results quickly, try to see what patients are saying, and also then take action as well. So this is a live screenshot I taken straight out of the dashboard last week. And I think it's just really cool to just highlight how, you know, easy it is and how how easy it is to interpret some of the feedback we're receiving from the patients, you know, for all audience members, like everyone in, you know, all our clients, all different people. So yeah, we split the results out into positive and negative sentiment. And then at the bottom, we have the actual live feedback coming through and constantly refreshing, constantly updating. So it'll be ranked from the newest to the oldest comments. So when new comments come through, they'll be presented at the top, for our clients to be able to read and interpret. But then the really good functionality, which I love, is that you're able to actually dive into the results at a particular word level. So we can see some of the key themes, some themes that are prevalent across both positive and negative sentiments. So if someone were able to, would like to look at, you know, hospital or excellent, when did someone use the word excellent in their response? So we can actually see what did patients think was excellent about their care that they received. But on the opposite end, we could look at pain or communication or disappointed. So what disappointed patients? What was the issues with food? These are really like really easy way to be able to, you know, digest the data. So we've gone from, you know, thousands and thousands of free text, unedited comments to real usable data, that our funds and hospitals can look at. And just a bit more on the technical side. So what are some of the insights that are enabled by the natural language processing model that we've applied? So something that we've seen with our traditional parametrics, as I mentioned, is there's a very, very large skew towards the positive end. So we can see that the average prem overall is just around, you know, even above 90% across most different categories. And overall, it's just under 93%. But then what we can see is that in the sentiment model that we've applied, only about just over 2/3 are positive. So while that's still, I think this is a testament to the health system in Australia, is that overall we're providing really good service, really good care, and over 2/3 of people think that their experience is positive, which is really good, something we should be really proud of. But I think it also just showcases to us that there maybe is a little bit more that we can do. So maybe before we were seeing, you know, over 90% positive, in the, you know, really positive. But I think, you know, there's a bit more nuance and a bit more detail to the data that we can really unpack and uncover. And also just when we look at it, at between patients who report negative and positive sentiment, it's actually a 12.6% difference in their overall prem metric, which is very significant, especially as with what Daniel was saying before. While the results are all positively skewed and they're all towards the higher end, it's the really important thing we're trying to do is trying to separate the variance. So there is variance, and 12.6% is quite significant when it comes to prompts. There's some, finally, go through. So this, the top left is also focusing on prems, but this is looking at the top box percentage. So in value-based care, top box percentage is a lot of the time used as a metric to, I guess, apply and grade hospitals and patient. Yeah, try to work out which hospitals are performing at their best or which doctors. And in our case, in our results, we're seeing about 40%. So what this means is that 40% of people are saying in, you know, a multitude of their prem measurements that they're reporting the highest possible result. So it's quite a high benchmark to achieve. And we could, yeah, we're seeing about just over 40% at the moment. But what I thought is incredibly interesting is that patients have reported a positive sentiment within their feedback. 9 out of 10 of them, or 9 out of 10 of the top box patients had positive comments to say as well. So I think this is a really clear correlation that we should really take forward. So saying we should really look at the comments that these people or people in the positive sentiment category are making to be able to discern, you know, what drives the top box response. So how can we be more ambitious? So we can really, we know that if we look in detail what the patients are saying in their positive feedback, we know we can try to discern a little bit more in a little bit more depth and detail. How can we get more people into that top box category, and how can we push that up, you know, into 50% plus? And then finally, just looking at PROMs as well. This is also really interesting. So we're seeing patients that reported positive sentiment in their feedback had, you know, 4 percentage points more likely to achieve a minimal clinically important difference. So as Daniel touched on before, this is like the bench. So it's a benchmark level that, you know, needs to be met in order for, you know, us to classify that a patient has improved from an outcome perspective. And with, you know, almost 4% of, or just under 4% of patients are more of patients are improving when they report positive sentiment. So it shows that there is, with positivity comes better outcomes as well for our patients and for our members of our funds. Just looking ahead, I'll let Daniel talk to some of the AI capabilities for trying to implement into voice of the patient as well. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for that, Jordan. Maybe just a couple of closing points on what we are doing with the data. So as Jordan mentioned, the natural language processing model really is an interesting foray to make more of the data that we have. But this does open a plethora of additional doors for us to collect new data, interpret that data more appropriately, but then also understand what can we do as a fraternity or as actuaries to actually, as I mentioned, be part of the process of improvement. And so, for example, here, what we are finding is that things like agentic AI that can learn and speak to a policyholder or a patient while they are undergoing care is something that is becoming really part of the landscape in patient-reported data. And what we mean by that is literally an AI agent that as the patients undergo that measurement assessment tool, they're asked the questions on the platform. They provide their answers in normal spoken English, and the platform then records and adjusts their additional questions as they provide that feedback. And what you can then do with that data, if you find that someone has had a negative experience or that they are provided with information or they've provided information to indicate that they are sitting below benchmark, you can prompt different stakeholders to intervene. So it doesn't mean that voice of the patient has to do that. You could prompt the health fund to do that. You could prompt the doctor or the hospital to do something. And ultimately, what we're also finding is patients are provided with feedback on where other patients like them are tracking. And this has proven to be one of the most valuable aspects of measurement. So if we can now bring in the bridge there as well to understand sentiment as part of that process, we can have a better understanding of where to focus and where to measure. But as Jordan said, I think this is something that is not a traditional actuarial field, and it's something where our skills, I think, are particularly useful. In all our engagements, both locally and abroad, when we talk about patient-reported data, value-based care, actuaries' ability to risk adjust and interpret data appropriately is one of the core missing or foundational skills in this environment. So part of the session today was that we'd love to encourage more actuaries to be involved, apply our skills, and really bring this forward. We're strong proponents that this is going to be a big part of the healthcare market in the future. And the advent of new technology and the pace at which AI is advancing is just going to make this more and more applicable and possible. Yep, happy for any questions.
That's great. Thank you, Jordan and Daniel. I think what really excites me about this kind of work is firstly seeing how, as actuaries, how we can find or why we identify these gaps in the market, find solutions to it, and then also use cutting-edge technology and techniques to try and find solutions as well. So some of the questions that are coming through, what do you see as some of the practical uses of your work for decision makers, and where do you see it as having the most effect?
Jordan, do you want to jump in on that, or do you want me to take that?
I think you can go with that one, Dan.
Okay, so one of the main aspects that is being used for currently is contracting and value-based contracting. So what we mean by that is actual practical implementation of contracts that hinge off what patients say. That requires real-time measurement and implementation. So how that would work practically is we provide the provider, be that a hospital or a doctor, with a dashboard that's updated, let's not say real time, but daily, with what their patients are saying about them, and then flags and highlights areas where they need to improve. And that is as specific as saying, in Ward G, patients are reporting a slow response to their pain needs when they need it. As you saw there, one of the comments that came up was about someone that had a double knee replacement and about the pain that relates to that. So part of that is that we provide the providers with a direct input of what they should be doing to improve. And again, to bring this back to where this is uniquely actuarial in its context, is that to do that appropriately, you have to risk adjust the patients that go in for that procedure. Individual hospitals really can't do that in mass because they only have their own hospital's data. What this enables us to do is to have a macro view across multiple hospitals, multiple patients, even across different countries and modalities, to understand the relative risk and the relative performance of different stakeholders.
Okay, thanks, Daniel. From your experience of engaging with insurers, how open are health insurers to changing healthcare services to deliver better value? And is this constrained by the health charging models and the risk of litigation?
Oh, that's a great question. So I actually think that the constrainment is much more a perceived aspect than it is real. We've engaged with numerous provider groups across multiple countries. And the question is always, when you put this in front of them, the provider or doctor group wants to see their own performance and they want to be able to understand what's happening. If you provide them with that as a truthful, honest perception, we have found mostly they are open to those kind of conversations. This data is their patient's data. It's not what Insight or the health fund or anybody is saying. And actually, what oftentimes happens is it decompresses the negotiation period because it's not a chest beating, we'll get this over the line. It's, look, this is what your patients are telling us, and we can show you how the risk adjustment works. But ultimately, if it's someone that's a subpar performer, you're lower than benchmark. What is a challenge sometimes is building the relevance of the data. What I mean by that is the data doesn't exist until you measure it. And if you don't measure it in time, it disappears. I can't go back and retrospectively evaluate patient report experience and outcomes 6 months or 12 months after the fact. So you have to create the data first before you can have the conversation. So that means you need buy-in from whoever the entity is that is going to sponsor and pay for this. And they, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on which side of the aisle you're on, ultimately then own that data because they are funding it. So the ideal place for this to function in kind of a perfect world would be for government to say they're measuring this independently en masse appropriately. But what oftentimes happens in most markets, and not just in our own, but also in, say, Hong Kong or what's happening in the UK, it's driven by the private sector as a key parameter that's measured. And then there is a little bit of tension initially about who owns the data.
Thanks. We are running short of time. I might sneak in one last one. So, Jordan, is there a linkage between your sentiment ratings and formal complaints?
That's an interesting one. I think we've had a chance to look at that directly, just because the formal complaints would tend to go directly to the funds themselves rather than through the Voice of the Patient platform. But I think that would be a really interesting next step to explore we'll try and partner with the funds to do that. It could be interesting.
Okay. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. So thank you both, Daniel and Jordan. A very exciting area, and look forward to seeing the progress. Thanks, everyone. Bye.